We'll bring Andrew Sharp into the conversation, NBA draft writer for and draft writer for Sports Illustrated. First up, the big trade. I don't know. It almost feels not under the radar is the wrong term, but a number one in a year with a consensus number one got traded. And it's just one of a number of stories that's being batted around right now. Do you agree with Boston moving that pick?
I personally don't agree with it. I don't think it was the right move. I think it was a bold move, and you have to admire the lack of fear that Ainge had. He wasn't impressed with Fultz and thought that they could get more value if they moved it, and he did it, which, like, I mean, 85% of the NBA would not have enough job security or enough guts to make that deal, and he did. I just personally, I'm a fan of Fultz, and I think that he's sort of a tier above anyone else in this draft. But you're right. I think the big picture here is that Celtics-Sixers trade was a huge move, and it now feels like that was 2 weeks ago and 20 rumors ago. So it's been a wild couple of days.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, rumors. Yeah. About 50 rumors ago, it feels like. And we'll get to those in just a second. I got a couple more questions on the draft, and the Celtics in particular. Yeah moving off Fultz and sliding down to three. So, yeah, the consensus is that it's a downgrade, obviously, and that Fultz has the potential to be a franchise changer. What are they looking at three, and how much of a downgrade is it talent-wise in your perspective?
In any draft, the guy who goes number one is usually the guy who has a chance to be a Hall of Famer and a real, like, landscape shifter in the NBA. And so a lot of people respond to that trade saying, well, he only moved down two spots. But once you get to two and three, like, it's all over the map in terms of the outcomes that you're dealing with. And the guys that they're talking about drafting, I don't think that the Celtics are going to keep whoever they take in this draft. I think that they are planning, they have bigger plans, but the guys he's considering reportedly are Jason Tatum and Josh Jackson, neither of whom are perfect players. I mean, Tatum is sort of like a poor man's Carmelo, which would have worked a lot better 10 or 15 years ago. And then Josh Jackson plays really hard. He's kind of like a 6'8", 6'9", version of Marcus Smart. So he makes a lot of winning plays, but he also can't shoot, and that sort of limits his ceiling a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do.
Andrew Sharp, our guest, I look at the Celtics. So the Celtics have, what, eight or nine first-round picks over the next 3 years? It's mind-boggling. Yeah. I picture Danny Ainge with, like, a litter full of puppies. Like, they're just everywhere, and you can't control them, and you panic, and you don't know what to do. What do you do with that many picks? You can't use them all. They're not all going to play.
Yeah, well, so that's one of the things that really, I think, goes underreported in terms of just the way that they can manage these assets, is that, like, Ainge wants to play hardball in some of these trades, but other teams around the league can look at him and say, look,
you can afford it.
You don't have roster spots for any of these guys.
You have so many that they're almost devalued, if that's a thing. Not quite, but almost.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens, is that basically teams are going to say, look, we know what you have, so we're not giving you superstar X, whether it's Porzingis or Jimmy Butler or whoever, without getting back like two or three picks, because you guys have six or seven. And so the demands and the asking price all gets distorted a little bit because of how much the Celtics have at this point.
So Porzingis is the huge news of today, that the Knicks are pondering moving him. And I do push back to people who say, you can't trade Kristaps Porzingis. No, you can trade anybody as long as the return is right. But what is the correct return for him? And what are the Knicks looking to do here? I guess they want to set themselves up for a longer rebuild. Like, it is a bit of a head scratcher.
So what are the Knicks looking to do here?
Yes.
Is a question that could apply to like 15 to 20 years.
Yes. Or any situation. Charles Oakley, Phil Jackson, Kristaps Porzingis. Sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of a permanent question for us. But the Porzingis deal, I don't know. I would be surprised if something actually happened this week, although it's not a great sign that he skipped the exit interviews and then the Knicks management didn't reach out to him to try to sort of broker a truce or just check in after something like that. That's not a good sign. And then the other thing, as far as trading him generally, I agree with you. I don't think that he is as untradeable as Knicks fans seem to pretend. Or I mean, like, they sort of treat him as if he's already a Hall of Famer. And the fact is, he's really good. He has probably more upside than anyone that's currently in this draft. But he's also had some injury issues, and he's not guaranteed to be like the cornerstone who brings them a title. So if the right offer is there, and it sounds like their asking price is pretty high, and they can get back a couple picks this year and next year and really rebuild, and maybe it makes sense, but yeah. I also think that the fact that they're having problems with Porzingis is more of a red flag. Like, of everyone in that organization, Porzingis is the one guy that they should have a good relationship with, and it's kind of concerning that Phil Jackson couldn't really get there.
Yeah, and it's amazing, like, the lack of emotional equity that front office has with its fans. Like, today is full freakout mode in New York.
Yeah, absolutely. There could be riots this afternoon if they make that deal.
The Toronto Raptors pick at 23 coming up. A lot of big men, you know, in these mock drafts kind of slated later. Is there a guy you like in the back end of this draft? I've read DJ Wilson. I mean, what do you think?
You know, if I were the Raptors, I wonder, because as you well know, this could be a really expensive summer for them. And they already have to make hard choices, whether it's Valanciunas or Ibaka, and what to pay Lowry. So given the uncertainty with that, the idea of drafting and stashing someone might be appealing. I know they got Poeltl from Utah last year, so they don't necessarily need like another big. But if they're taking somebody who can help them next year, I really, really like DJ Wilson. I also like TJ Leaf as a potential role player who can come in and help with the second unit. Super skilled power forward from UCLA. So that would be the goal. If they're taking somebody who's actually going to play next year, get someone who can help that second unit up front and someone who can be a little versatile.
If you could put together the deal yourself, if you had your druthers about you, what are you paying Kyle Lowry? Do you even think about the big numbers or 5 years?
I mean, yeah, I would go 4 years and then sort of whatever. I mean, it's going to be interesting because he lost a lot of leverage when the Sixers got the Fultz deal done. Because I don't think they're going to want to pay him $150 or $200 million or whatever it is. So I would gauge the market and try to get it as far down from the max as you can, which it's not exactly rocket science, but I think that extra year is not gonna be a factor for the Raptors. I think they're gonna have to start from 4 years.
So it seems like it's very unlikely that Paul George is even gonna start the season next year with the Indiana Pacers, and yesterday Michael Granger at Sportsnet link the Raptors to George, and I'm sure the Pacers are going to get a lot of calls on him, and everybody around the league knows they have to move him or else they risk losing him for nothing next offseason. What kind of a return do you imagine the Pacers are looking for a guy who can really transform your organization?
You know, it's hard because he can transform your organization for a year, and then he's likely going to L.A. It's sort of a strange situation. His people are calling around the league saying, look, you can trade for him. He'll come and play hard, but we're probably going to L.A. next summer, and you can try to convince him, but, like, that's the plan. And so it really complicates A, what teams can offer, and B, what the Pacers can expect. So I think this return that Indiana gets is going to end up being a lot less than people would have expected from Paul George. And had they traded him 6 months ago, they probably could have gotten a lot more. So like a team like the Raptors, I you might as well roll the dice because there's not a whole lot of other options for them, or the Wizards sitting here. But, like, I don't even think, as a Wizards fan, I wouldn't want them to trade Otto Porter for 1 year of Paul George because it just sort of screws with the whole future. So I honestly have no idea what they'll actually get for him, given the overtures about the Lakers. And I don't even know if the Lakers will give anything up for him because they don't want to make the mistake of gutting half their team for a guy who's going to come there on his own a year later.
So Fultz at one and pretty much a consensus number one, and it's almost taken the main chatter about Lonzo Ball away. I'm no prospect expert. I find it difficult sometimes to project, you know, a player from college and how he'll look in the NBA. But it feels like we don't talk about Lonzo Ball's ability or game very much for obvious reasons. He's going to LA at two. Is that a fait accompli to you? And if he does, what is his impact?
So, first of all, that's another thing. This has been such a wild week that no one has really mentioned Lonzo Ball or LeVar Ball.
I know. It's weird.
We need to do something.
Months. Yeah, so it's a nice break, actually. I enjoy it. But Lonzo's game, it's a lot of it depends on how real his shooting was. I think he surprised people by how well he hit from the outside at UCLA. And if he can make that jumper in the league, then he'll be a great player. Basically, what I'm expecting is not necessarily like a Magic Johnson, Jason Kidd type cornerstone, but something like Ricky Rubio with an effective three-point shot, which if Ricky Rubio could shoot, he would be unbelievable.
I love Ricky Rubio. I have such a soft spot for Ricky Rubio.
I'll always love Ricky Rubio. You know, I love him now. If he could hit 40% of his threes, there's not much you could do to guard him. And that's the player that I think teams expect Lonzo to be.
Remember when the T-Wolves were that up-and-coming team that were just like, they were going to be that powerhouse in the Western Conference? It was just a matter of time.
Yeah,
like,
back in the day, I remember that.
It was like last year. What happened?
Yeah. I'm holding out hope for Kat and Rubio and the Wolves to make some moves next year. But we certainly jumped the gun a little bit.
Yeah, and it feels like everything now, Andrew, is kind of, it's done with the specter and the cloud of LeBron James's move out west in a year's time. Like that feels fait accompli, especially with the David Griffin stuff yesterday. Like it feels like nobody's going to be shocked when that happens, and it's just, we'll play out the year. We'll play out the string. The Warriors will win another title, and then we'll get the two super teams in the Western Conference in a year.
Yeah, you know, it may have been a little bit more complicated for LeBron to leave Cleveland a second time until last night and all the stuff that went down with Griffin, and now he kind of has that built-in excuse. And I should add, that's why like a team like the Raptors, they can look at this and say, you know, let's just bide our time and see what happens here, because the East could open up and they could be major players in terms of the future. I don't know if anybody's going to beat like the Warriors or the hypothetical LeBron Lakers super team over the next few years, but it's fun. I think we needed this sort of shakeup after that dreadful final couple of weeks of the playoffs. Now it's at least entertaining to see all these pieces moving around.
He is Andrew Sharp. Who are you terrified of the Capitals losing in the Vegas expansion draft?
I wasn't aware that there was an expansion draft coming.
Oh yeah, big Caps fan. Hey, you're a big Caps guy. Yeah.
I am not,
bandwagoner.
I'm not a big Caps guy. They better not trade Ovechkin. That's all I ask. I want him to win it here. I don't want a Ray Bourque situation.